This podcast was recorded Thursday, January 6th at 10:31 a.m. Things may have changed by the time you hear it.
Yeah, like all Americans will hold certain truths to be self-evident. How's that for a New Year's resolution?
Sounds like a lofty goal. Let's talk politics. This is Snollygoster, WOSU Public Media's weekly look at Ohio politics and all those Snollygosters who promise to be a little less shrewd in the new year. I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson. Coming up in the podcast, two Democrats running for governor pick their running mates.
But first, it is hard to believe it has been a year.
We will never give up. We will never concede. It doesn't happen. You don't concede when there's theft involved.
That was, of course, then-President Trump firing up his supporters at a rally 1 year ago today, and some of those supporters storming the Capitol, stopping for a few hours at least the legal certification of the election of the President of the United States.
On the one-year anniversary, President Biden denounced the violence and vowed to make sure it does not happen again.
What kind of nation are we going to be? Are we going to be a nation that accepts political violence as a norm? Are we going to be a nation where we allow partisan election officials to overturn the legally expressed will of the people? Are we going to be a nation that lives not by the light of the truth, but in the shadow of lies? We cannot allow ourselves to be that kind of nation.
Biden denounced his predecessor, saying Donald Trump and his, quote, web of lies is attacking the legitimacy of the U.S. electoral system. Biden said Trump and his allies are holding a dagger at the throat of American democracy. Strong, strong words
I was
from
about
President
to,
Biden.
Yeah, I was about to say the same thing. Very surprising the tone he took. Very unfrequently, if at all, mentioning Donald Trump by name. His predecessor, the dagger at the throat of American democracy. I mean, it really did sound like a wartime address.
Yeah.
It looked like a wartime address. It was stronger than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah, I wonder if it was too strong. I wonder how many people really appreciate what happened a year ago on January 6th. And I don't think in this, after 4 years, well, 5 years, we include the campaign of the outrageousness of what was the Trump administration. I think we can say that objectively. January 6th was sort of like the culmination of it, like sort of if you're watching reality TV, do people really understand what happened there and how had Mike Pence come in contact with these protesters, something terrible might have happened. Had Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer been in contact with these folks, what might have happened? We don't know. But these folks, don't forget the video and the pictures. They were incredibly angry. And it was a mob.
Yeah, it really was a mob. I know there were a lot of people who extensively planned their actions before going to Washington, D.C. There are also many people who got caught up in that mob and stormed the Capitol. I mean, stupidly, illegally, recklessly, whatever. But I don't know that it was all pre-planned, premeditated. But either way, it was just incredible television. I mean, the photos of the smoke outside of the U.S. Capitol as people are climbing the concrete wall and then they're breaking the window and the policeman has to shoot the woman who's climbing through the window, shoots her and kills her. And then you have the ridiculous Wolfman or whatever he was called wearing
the shaman
wearing the hide of an animal with his face painted. Then they're
sitting I think it was in the House chamber or the Senate chamber. I forget which chamber he was
people
in. The Senate chamber.
People in tactical gear running through there holding zip ties ready to, presumably, to tie up
people.
Lawmakers.
Yeah, and then, so we had the video of that day. And then, as the cell phone video came out in the days and weeks and months later, it just got even more surreal. But, you know, our memories are short. And I think the Democrats in particular, some Republicans, but mainly Democrats, are using this anniversary to remind us what happened on January 6th. as a reminder that the threat is still out there. And as politically, it's a Biden there, and that cut that we played, they're pushing their voter rights bill, which is now before Congress, which they're going to have to break the filibuster or reach a compromise, likely have to break the filibuster to get it passed. And that's very dubious at this point.
Yeah, I'm not sure if that's a bridge too far for the Democratic Party, but there is a lot of momentum to do it. Yeah. And so, yeah, I wouldn't be shocked if they did it. Getting back to the insurrection, there were a lot of Ohioans involved. 38 Ohioans faced charges in connection with the riot, the insurrection, whatever you want to call it. They come from all over the state, Columbus, Dayton, Logan, Canton, Toledo. Some like Eric Rao of Columbus have already pleaded guilty to misdemeanor charges.
Yeah, others like Jessica Watkins of Dayton and Sandra Ruth and Benny Alvin Parker. The Parkers face conspiracy charges along with Jessica Watkins. Investigators say the Parkers were affiliated with the Oath Keepers militia. David Mahaffey of Dayton faces charges of assaulting, resisting, or impeding officers. Others face charges of stealing government property, damaging government property, or tampering with documents or proceedings. So Ohioans were quite visible at the insurrection.
Do you subscribe to the theory that our democracy is indeed in danger?
You know, I have. No, I don't know. I talked to longtime Republicans, one longtime Republican I saw over the holiday break. He's legitimately concerned.
These are moderate Chamber of Commerce type Republicans?
Yeah. Fiscally conservative, socially conservative, but not supportive of Donald Trump. Legitimately concerned that what 2024 could bring. Should Trump be the nominee, and should Trump win or lose, especially if he loses, what could happen? If some of these states, if what's happened in these states overturns elections, I mean, they're legitimately concerned. I have more faith in the system, perhaps, than that. I think that the system will prevail. Let's hope it doesn't take chaos to have it prevail. But that's my thought.
Yeah, it's a strange what could happen going forward. I mean, what if a Democratic approved Senate approves the next election results? I mean, how is that viewed?
Yeah.
By these extremists who think that Donald Trump wins every election. Apparently, it's. You know, I guess I'm getting more and more worried as time goes on because this whole situation is so patently absurd. I mean, there's no evidence that Donald Trump won the election. It's all made up. It's all the big lie.
Yeah, but it doesn't stop. Like, let's take the Republicans running for U.S. Senate. They continue to repeat the lie was the election was stolen. Let's take J.D. Vance. J.D. Vance, let's take him for example.
What we saw in 2020, and it's important to have the courage to say it, is that the technology industry, working with Democratic operatives in a few big battleground states, rigged the 2020 election.
J.D. Vance, the same J.D. Vance who once called Donald Trump reprehensible and cultural heroin, now fully supports his false claim that Biden and the Democrats and technology companies and whoever else stole the 2020 election.
I might be going a little too far here. J.D. Vance does not really believe that.
Doesn't matter. He's saying it. He's running for the United States Senate, as is Josh Mandel, who says the election was stolen. Jane Timken falsely claims there was widespread voter fraud. Same goes for Bernie Moreno. Only Matt Dolan, who's running for Senate, clearly points out Trump's lies about the 2020 election. I mean,
it's crazy.
Yeah,
it's beyond the pale absurd.
Well, the question is, what will be the end result? I mean, I think Republicans in the polls show that if they need to have this line of attack messaging to win the nomination in their primaries this spring and into the summer.
It polls well. I mean,
in the primaries. But what happens in the general when someone like Josh Mandel or J.D. Vance is continuing to claim that the election was stolen, and we assume the Democratic Congress is going to be out with it's technically bipartisan. There are two Republicans on that committee. That committee is going to come out with its investigation on January 6th and the insurrection, who is responsible for it. It's clear that the election was not stolen. So do voters judge people on that and say, we're not going to elect you? Well, we don't know.
Anyway, moving on from the 2020 election to the 2022 election, a big election here. Ohioans will vote for members of Congress. They'll also pick a new senator, as we've talked about, as well as decide statewide offices, including governor.
Yeah, 2022 is an important year, no doubt. I predict, no doubt, some politician will say the 2022 election is the most important election of our lifetimes.
Either way, we can't say for certain how important the election is, but the candidates for governor are picking their running mates, their choice for lieutenant governor. Of course, Governor DeWine already has John Husted.
He's keeping him.
As far as we know, it's too early. His Republican rivals have chosen their partners. Joe Blystone has picked Union County Marine veteran, and I don't think I told you about this. I went to high school with Jeremiah Workman. I know Jeremiah Workman, not well, but I do know him. And last month, Republican Jim Renacci picked Christian film producer Joe Knopp as his running mate.
Yes, the big news this week was on the Democratic side. As you probably know, or should know, there are two Democrats running for governor, both former mayors from Southwest Ohio, Nan Whaley from Dayton and John Cranley from Cincinnati. They named their running mates on the same day, and both Whaley and Cranley went for geographically diverse partners.
Yeah, maybe a little bit of snollygostering going on here. Whaley picked a running mate from Cleveland. Cranley picked one from Toledo. Whaley will run with Cuyahoga County Council member Cheryl Stevens. That's hard to say. And Cranley will go with State Senator Teresa Fetter as his running mate.
Cranley's pick has the higher name ID among Ohio Democrats. Senator Fetter has been a longtime fixture at the State House. She's known for her efforts to fight human trafficking and to support abortion rights. She silenced the House chamber a few years ago when then, as a state rep, she disclosed that she had an abortion after being raped while serving in the military. She's a veteran as well.
Yeah, I do remember that powerful moment. Cheryl Stevens brings Northeast Ohio Democratic Party cred to the Whaley campaign. Stevens has served on the county council for 4 years. Before that, she was mayor of Cleveland Heights. Stevens, who is African-American, also brings racial diversity to the Whaley campaign.
The first thing that strikes you about this announcement, they're both on the same day, so it killed any speculation that they would team up. If you recall back in 2018, the two leading Republicans running for governor, Mike DeWine and John Husted, decided to team up. John Husted stepped back to be DeWine's lieutenant governor. That did not happen this time, so it looks like Whaley and Cranley are in the primary race to stay. Not going to join up.
Fetter has more experience in the State House, better known among Ohio Democrats, that will carry a little bit of weight. I mean, she's still not a ubiquitous name. It's not like everybody knows Teresa Fetter. It's not like even Dennis Kucinich or somebody on that level. She's well known in political circles.
She's well known among Democrats, certainly Democratic activists in her impassioned fights for abortion rights and against human trafficking are very visible. She's a former teacher. So she helps with the teacher's vote, I guess, veteran. She's got a great resume. She did vote for House Bill 6, though. She says she voted for the nuclear bailout to protect jobs in her district. She says she was misled by First Energy in that vote. So it's going to be hard for Cranley, a little harder, to denounce Mike DeWine for his stance on House Bill 6 if his running mate voted for it. And Republicans certainly will make note of that and already have.
Yeah, Cheryl Stevens, her experience comes from local and county government, in particular economic development. That's important. I have no doubt she's a qualified public servant, but she's very little name recognition in Central Ohio anyway.
But she has good name recognition in Northeast Ohio and the Cleveland area.
Which is probably why Whaley picked her.
Which is the fertilest. Is that a word?
Most fertile
ground for Democrats in Ohio. Can she get out Democratic votes up there to support that ticket? So, you know, wise choices by both candidates. It seems like they're running strong campaigns, and it should be really interesting to see how it plays out.
The most interesting pick, both for me personally and just on a human level here, was the Joe Blystone pick. Joe Blystone, very much an outsider, not likely to win this race at all. Mike DeWine, Jim Renacci have a lot more money than him. But he picks Jeremiah Workman, who was a high school classmate of mine, as I've said. He is a Marine Corps veteran who has been open about PTSD issues, has been open about trying to take his own life following his service in Iraq. You should look up his resume in Iraq to the things he did. He's been awarded the Navy Cross for rescuing several Marines from a building that was circled by insurgents. It's really incredibly heroic stuff. But it's a
Democratic politician.
I have to laugh because on the Fox News appearance with Joe Blystone, as he's announcing this, that he's his running mate, they say, Joe, how did you meet Jeremiah? Why'd you pick Jeremiah? And it turns out they were introduced by a Delaware City Council member who turned down the offer from Blystone.
You're not supposed to say that publicly, Joe.
I mean, God bless him for being honest, right? That's sort of That's kind of his
shtick. You're my second pick.
Cowboys third pick, because his first choice, Joanna Swallen, dropped out. She was best known for owning a Northeast Ohio restaurant, and she refused to enforce a mask mandate there when we had mask requirements in restaurants. So,
well,
of course, everyone predicted Joe Blystone's campaign would be unique, disheveled.
Yeah.
Cowboy Joe.
He's got pretty cool lawn signs if you've seen him out there.
Have I seen them? They're everywhere where I live. Yeah. I was messaging with a State House reporter who I know that I'm not saying it's going to be the same thing, but the yard signs remind me of the summer of 2016 with Trump signs.
You know who's a big supporter of Joe Blystone?
No.
Mike DeWine. Because every Joe Blystone vote takes a vote away from Jim Renacci.
Yes.
And it splits that primary. So the more anti-DeWine folks enter the primary, where there's word of a couple others who are interested in collecting signatures, Candace Keller, the more that anti-DeWine camp is diluted, the better chance he has of winning that primary with ease.
Yeah, when they asked Jeremiah why he became Joe Blystone's running mate, he said, well, I told my wife I saw there was a swamp brewing in Columbus. And I said, you guys are splitting the Trump vote is what you're doing.
Yeah.
Anyway, moving on now to our snollygoster of the week. We had a couple other possibilities this week. We almost went with the Ohio National Guard members who cannot help on hospital missions because they're not vaccinated against COVID-19. So much for being at the ready, right?
Yeah.
But instead, we are going with kind of the layup, kind of the easy softball choice. Any Republicans who continue insisting that the 2020 election was stolen without evidence, without any shred of credibility at all, without any truth to their message, they continue saying it.
Yes. So on the anniversary of the insurrection, we felt that that was the snollygoster of the week, snollygosters of the week.
Yeah. If you have any suggestions for next week, you can email them to snollygoster@wosu.org. Also, be sure to leave us a good review on iTunes or wherever else you get your podcasts. For our web producer, Michael DeBonis, I'm Steve Brown.
And I'm Mike Thompson for Snollygoster from WOSU Public Media.